Committee on Rules and Executive Appointments. For June 24th, 2008, we have a fairly full agenda today. I do not have a quorum at this time, but I do have two members of the committee, so I'm going to open it up for public hearing. We're anticipating a third member here in about 5 minutes and hopefully a fourth within a few minutes after that. We will begin the process by going through what positions are actually full-time positions with the state. And so I'm going to begin with Scott Parra for the Department of Administrative Services. Do you have anything that you'd like to add? Mr. Hara, if you could identify yourself for the record, tell us a little bit about yourself. I would promise myself I would not make any comments about DAS directors, so I'm going to try to keep that promise.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, member of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott Hara. I'm the director of the Department of Administrative Services, and it's an honor to be here to meet with you today. Give you a little background on my career in state government and that's what it is. It's been a career for me. I started in state government back in 1987 at the old executive department as a public administration trainee and went from there to a series of progressively growing responsible positions at the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Served there for 12 years as the budget manager and for the last 6 years as the administrator of their fiscal and business services division, which is their shared services division, much like the Department of Administrative Services is a shared services agency for the rest of state government. I look forward to the opportunity to serve in the role of the director of Department of Administrative Services. I think we play an important role in helping the state agencies provide services to Oregonians. And with that, I'll stop for right now if there's questions. I know you have a very busy agenda.
Yeah, I apologize to you for the background noise and to the people in the audience here. It can't be avoided. The Capitol is in need of repairs, or at least the street is. Something on the outside is in need of repairs. Would like to state, too, Senator Atkinson, are you on the line?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Atkinson. So we do have a quorum now. Any questions for Mr. Harris? Just for the record, so that people understand here, I'll repeat this a couple of times. We're in public hearing now. We will go through virtually every interview that we have today before we actually do any motions. So no one has to stay around for those motions unless the chair asks you to stay around, and the chair is not asking you to stay around. And I promise that I wouldn't make any comments about DAS directors, and the longer you stay there at the... Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now to an old friend. Mr. Williams for the Department of Corrections. You must be used to the flowing of concrete.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Max Williams, and I'm the current director of the Oregon Department of Corrections, here for reconfirmation before the Senate today. Hard for me to believe that it's been 4 years plus since I appeared before you the last time. I'm thankful and humbled by the governor's decision to reappointment in this position, and I am grateful for the opportunity to appear in front of your committee to answer any questions you might have about the department. I thought I'd just take a second to share with you that in the 4.5 years I've been the director of the Department of Corrections...
Mr. Williams, you might have to speak up a little bit so
absolutely.
The audience can hear you over this.
In the 4.5 years I've been the director of the Department of Corrections, the system itself has grown by almost 1,500 offenders, from 12,263 to now over 13,600. We've added two new prison facilities, one in Lakeview, one in Madras, and we've now fully expanded our facilities for women at the Wilsonville facility. We've grown, obviously, in budget, in staff, in operational issues. We continue to be challenged, I think, as an agency on a handful of fronts. Clearly, one of them is on the budget front, on providing both and having sufficient resources to provide adequate medical, mental health, and drug and alcohol treatment services within our system remains, I think, one of our key challenges. I think we've had a number of important things that have happened from a progress standpoint in the last 4.5 years. With the blessing of your legislative colleagues and yourselves, we were able to add the first new treatment beds for male offenders in our system in the last 7,000 beds of male prison construction. And those beds are located at the Deer Ridge facility in Madras. We've also substantially increased the amount of staff that we have who are authorized in our budget and with our ability to hire them to provide mental health services to offenders in our system. And that's a substantially growing population of our overall prison population, and one of which I remain, frankly, quite concerned. The only other issue I'd raise is, again, with the support of the governor and a number of other state agencies and local government and private nonprofits, we're actively involved in the governor's reentry council, which is really trying to focus on the barriers to offender reentry. As you know, 93% of our prison population ultimately returns to the community after they've served their sentence. So we are working diligently not only at DOC but with a number of other providers and other agencies, both state and local, to really break down those barriers for transition and successful reentry back into the community. And it's one of the areas where I think we're the most hopeful of our real ability to impact public safety. You know, the mission of the Department of Corrections is to promote public safety by holding offenders accountable for their actions and reducing the likelihood of criminal behavior. And I personally remain very committed to that mission of the department. And I'm pleased to lead an agency with over 4,500 employees who have dedicated themselves to one of what I believe to be one of the most difficult jobs in law enforcement and public safety in the state of Oregon. And they're great people, and they do great work every day, mostly unrecognized by the citizens who don't pay much attention to what happens in our prison environment. But it's been my pleasure for the past 4.5 years to lead this organization, and I look forward to continuing our efforts on all of these fronts, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Any questions for Mr. Williams?
Mr. Chairman, I would.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've had a couple of slippages on opening dates. And the folks in Jefferson County have been watching pretty closely the Deer Ridge facility development. And I'm just wondering if Mr. Williams would care to comment on when we might see next phases happening up in Deer Ridge.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ferrioli, we have originally the medium side of the Deer Ridge facility was scheduled to open in February of this year. We've opened the minimum side of the facility, and that's a co-located medium and minimum facility. There's about 1,800 beds of prison construction at that site, about 620 or so in the minimum side, and that's open and almost entirely full at this point. We delayed the opening on the medium side really for three primary reasons. One was in both the last April and in this October's prison population forecast, there continues to be a flattening of growth. It hasn't stopped, but it's not going at the rate that it was going as those opening dates were originally projected. So the growth is somewhat flattened, but is still ticking upward. Secondly, the department, as you know, as we've worked over this last few months in conversations with much of the legislature, continues to be challenged from a budgetary standpoint. And with uncertainty with respect to the salary pot and other issues that we had to potentially plan for, we found a way to delay the opening in a way that would actually allow us to preserve some financial resources inside the agency to manage our budget. And then the third reason, obviously, is, as you're aware, there are two ballot measures that are going to be on the ballot this November, Initiative Petition 40 and Senate Bill 1087, which was referred by the legislature. Both of those could have a very substantial impact on the agency from a number of beds that we would need to make available in a short period of time. So we continue to hold back on the opening of that meeting facility at Deer Ridge. To also reserve a place where we could start to manage the almost immediate growth should either of those measures pass. And so that gives us a little bit of a fallback area to at least do some immediate management of the populations that would start to increase under those measures. As you know from your career, Senator, when you flip the switches on any new facility, whether you have two offenders in that facility or 1,200 offenders in that facility, there are certain fixed costs that are associated with the decision to actually turn those switches on. So we continue to hold for as long as we possibly can from a population standpoint to delay that to try to preserve as much fiscal resource as we can for the agency.
Any follow-ups?
No, Mr. Chairman, that was a comprehensive answer. I appreciate it very much.
Senator Atkinson, do you have any questions?
I've already asked them before the hearing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Max, let me ask you an unusual question. I think we all know, I'm trying to put you on the spot. We all know, in a sense, one of some of the challenges that you've identified that we've commonly discussed in this building. Can you think of a challenge that you know of that doesn't normally come up? I mean, something that you have a difficult time addressing in the system, but it isn't something that normally is on the plate here that we discuss on a regular basis.
Chair Devlin, I hope this isn't that you already know the answer to that question. You're hoping that I'll guess the one you're thinking. I can tell you that you know, from an operational standpoint, I think we are challenged on a number of fronts that I think we do raise here, but maybe don't always get attention. Certainly, in the last legislative session, we began to help us address almost a $70 million hole we have with respect to deferred maintenance in our system. It's not a very sexy conversation, but as we build and continue to build prison facilities, after 10 to 15 years since they've been constructed, we get to a point where we actually have to start thinking about replacement of equipment and other issues that aren't funded in our base budget. And the way we budget in state government doesn't really provide you the opportunity to reserve resources biennium to biennium to address those issues. I think that's a significant issue, not only for the Department of Corrections with, you know, literally billions of dollars of on-the-ground assets, but it's a bigger question for state government generally, everywhere where we have infrastructure, from the state hospital new construction that's coming on to the university system and other people who operate large institutional environments like that. That's one issue. The other issue that I think people sometimes don't give much consideration to is, in a prison environment, we have virtually almost everybody that you can think of in the regular world working inside the walls of the institution. Doctors, dentists, nurses, pharmacists, plumbers, electricians, etc. And it becomes increasingly challenging to hire in a competitive way those professional staff to provide the resources that in many cases we're constitutionally obligated to provide. And both of those issues, I would say, are ones that don't get a lot of attention when we're having conversations in the building, but become significant operational challenges to us in running the agency in a manner that we're obligated to run.
Thank you very much, Mr. Williams, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, members of the committee.
Okay, we'll go to our next. Again, I apologize to the people here in the audience. I know that you're having problems hearing. We're trying to raise the volume. Hopefully they will finish pouring concrete here in the next 10 or 20 minutes, because this would be kind of difficult to deal with all day long. The next person up is Tim McCabe, the Department of Economic and Community Development. Mr. McCabe, if you'd please identify yourself for the record. Just give us a brief presentation. We'll see if there are any questions.
Morning. Chair Devlin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tim McCabe. I'm Acting Director of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today regarding my appointment, and this would be my first appointment. As you may know, I've been Acting Director since May 12th of this year. Already have a lot of experience with the department. I've been the governor's senior policy advisor for economic development since August of 2006. Prior to serving in the governor's office, I was economic development manager for Pacific Orc for 10 years, serving Oregon communities and businesses throughout the state, as well as southern Washington and northern California. During my time at Pacific Orc, I also had the opportunity to be president of the Oregon Economic Development Association, which helped me to diversify the state's economy. I really am excited about this opportunity to help Oregon, particularly Oregon's rural communities, and I welcome any questions you may have.
Any questions for Mr. McCabe? Yes, Senator Perriello.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try not to question each and every person appearing today, but we're having some serious dislocations in rural Oregon, and that isn't just eastern. That's rural, coastal, forestry, and fishing, and then rural high desert with continuing litigation against grazing and timber harvesting. You know, I don't see any unified plan in Oregon for dealing with the issues of rural Oregon. As a matter of fact, we seem to be disconnecting from mechanisms that might help, like the Office of Rural Policy. And I just wondered if there has been some discussion in your agency relative to helping revitalize rural Oregon, particularly in light of the failure to reauthorize the safety net dollars for
The
safety net dollars.
Oh, right.
And I'm not surprised you haven't heard of them. that may in fact bankrupt about 26 Oregon counties.
Right.
So, you know, it will fall on your shoulders to come up with a strategy. I'd like to hear what your thinking is.
Chair Devlin, Senator Ferriol, it's a very good point. As you probably know, during the last session, the governor asked for $11.4 million in regional rural funds. That was reduced to $2 million. They also asked for $100 million recapitalization of the Special Public Works Fund that works for infrastructure, water and sewer in particular. That was recapitalized to $21 million. So those are services that rural Oregon communities relied upon heavily. And in answer to your question, I'm forming work groups right now looking at all the programs, particularly the programs that affect rural Oregon. Those are the SPWF Fund, the Special Public Works Funds, the Targeted Service Providers, the Small Business Development Councils, all of those things that rural Oregon communities count on. And we're looking for ways to strengthen those programs and better delivery of those programs. We're looking to restructure the whole department to better serve rural Oregon communities as well as businesses throughout the state. I don't have the answer for you today, but I hope to have it by September 15th.
Mr. Chairman, there is an event planned for Corbett coming up. It'll be a council, essentially a gathering of rural Oregon leaders to discuss what needs to happen in economic developments, particularly in light of the safety net issue. And I'll make sure that you get an invitation.
I very much appreciate that,
Senator. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Any additional questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Atkinson.
A couple of questions. First of all, Tim, thank you very much for us trying to connect. I apologize. It seemed on my office of staff we had all the wrong numbers for you, so thank you very much for your persistence.
Things happen.
My questions for you really echo what Senator Ferrioli had to say. I was up there certainly for the special session in February, where a lot of issues regarding your department and the housing department I was working on. And during both of those episodes, with both those departments during the special session, promises were made to me. I received what I think equates to a nice pat on the head so that the senator would leave town. And absolutely zero follow-up. One of the biggest issues I faced in housing in Southern Oregon was pretty much swept under the carpet. We have a huge need that's not really so much sewer projects as it is on our forestry payments as they relate to MAP, as it relates to sheriff patrols in rural areas, and a huge amount of unemployment that we face. I don't dump all those certainly on your department, but I need to have some assurances from you in your department. When a senator calls and needs help in rural Oregon, that there's immediate follow-through and immediate action taken. I'm very disappointed and very concerned with what is not happening. I'd like to respond to that.
Chair Devlin, Senator Atkinson, I'd very much like to meet with you to find out what was promised and then follow through, but I assure you that any time a senator or a representative comes to us with a perceived problem or an actual problem, a concern, or need of help, we will act immediately and help to remedy that situation.
Could you please elaborate on your comments as it relates to forestry payments in rural Jackson, Josephine, Douglas, and Santa County?
Well, we're working, as you probably know, we're working working with Tim Nesmith's office on those issues, the Deputy Chief of Staff, I'm sorry, Chair Devlin and Senator Atkinson. We are working with Tim Nesmith's office on that to do to define ways that we can address those issues. I believe the recommendation is going to go before our commission this month. We're going to be suspending interest payments and payments on loans to those counties for the prescribed 2 years that statute allows us, and we're identifying other ways to help with the issues. But again, Tim Nesbitt probably has more answers for you than I do, because I've just gotten involved with this process.
Senator Atkinson, do you have a follow-up?
No, I don't. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay. Any additional questions? Thank you very much, Mr. McKay, for coming here today. I'm going to pause here for just a moment to tell the audience and the committee that this noise is going to continue till noon. We have two choices. We can close the blinds and live with it, or we can move the committee rooms, which in terms of actually dealing with all the technology and everything might take us 20 minutes probably to do. Do you want to move?
Definitely.
Okay. I'm going to do just two more, Mr. Ward and Mr. Gamson, and then we're going to recess briefly to go to another room. And I apologize to the audience for this, but no one apparently seemed to know that this construction was going to be occurring outside the building. Mr. Ward, if you would identify yourself for the record, tell us a little bit about your first 4 years in this position and why you want to continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Phil Ward and members, Director of the Water Resources Department, and here, of course, is the governor's nominee for reappointment to that position. I have spent, Mr. Chair and members, it's hard for me to believe, but I've spent the last 25 years of my career involved directly in the natural resource management business in this state, and have come to believe over that time that resource protection and environmental opportunity can and must coexist and complement each other in the management of our natural resources in Oregon. Oregon, Mr. Chair and members, is blessed with an abundant water resource, but it is one with very real limitations. It's distributed unevenly, both in timing and geography, and it must be managed, in my view, for long-term sustainability. The department has implemented a number of new programs in recent times to this end, Mr. Chair. The Oregon Water Supply and Conservation Initiative, which was funded in the 2007 budget, is a data-gathering exercise to help us build the foundational data so that we can build a long-term water supply strategy for our state. That will be completed by the first of the year, so we'll be able to have a detailed briefing for you early in the 09 session. Additionally, the 2008 session, supplemental session of the legislature, as you know, adopted a bill that was known as the Agriculture and Community Water Act of 2008. This was a piece of legislation that set aside $2.5 million for feasibility work for water conservation, reuse, and supply projects in communities around the state. Again, as you know, $750,000 of those $2.5 million was dedicated specifically to a project in the Umatilla Basin that's known as the Umatilla Aquifer Recovery Project. That's currently underway, and we'll have some updates for you during the 2009 session. We've also had, Mr. Chair and members, some significant gains here in Oregon in recent years in restoring flow to streams that need it. We've put about 900 cubic feet per second voluntarily back in streams that were flow short in the summer months. That's, Mr. Chair, about six times what the states of Washington, Idaho, and Montana have done combined. Oregon leads the country in voluntary flow restoration. What's been encouraging to me is that we found landowners around the state using this program, our in-stream leasing program, as a management tool to protect their existing water rights when their management scheme changes on the land, and to generate some income. We've also, Mr. Chair and members, had significant gains in workforce diversity in the Water Resources Department, about a 15% increase since 03. We'll work to continue those gains. So in conclusion, Mr. Chair and members, I think we'd all acknowledge that the years ahead are going to be challenging ones in terms of water resource management in our state. The demands on the resource will only increase, and it will take thoughtful planning and the implementation of creative strategies like the ones we've just talked about to meet Oregon's water needs in the future. I'm personally committed to this effort, Mr. Chair and members. So with that, I thank you for the opportunity to appear before you this morning. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Ward? Seeing no questions, I would like to state for the record that I think you've identified that some of the responsibilities of your department have been expanded substantially, at least the resources to carry out some of those responsibilities. The responsibilities may have always been there, but the resources weren't always there to carry them out. So thank you very much for coming here today. And we will probably take action later this afternoon, or hopefully maybe by noon, if we're lucky. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Our next party actually was supposed to be here at a time Pacific. You are here. So, Mr. Gampson, would you please come forward?
I am here.
Yes, if you would please identify yourself for the record, tell us a little bit about yourself, and tell us why you're interested in this appointment.
Chair Devlin and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Paul Gamson, G-A-M-S-O-N. For the record, I'm currently the chair of the Oregon Employment Relations Board. I'd like to begin by thanking the governor for reappointing me to the position and giving me the opportunity to continue in my public service. The Oregon Employment Relations Board is a small agency, as you may know. It is, in essence, the labor court for the public sector in Oregon. We hear and decide cases involving the state, cities, counties, school districts, all public employees in Oregon. I have spent my professional career in labor law and labor management relations, 20 years as a labor attorney in a private practice, and I brought that experience for my first term on the Employment Relations Board. I would note that the governor has also designated me as the chair of the board, which means that in addition to my normal duties of deciding cases and writing decisions, I'm also the chief administrator of the board, and we have had some challenges in recent years in that regard. As so many agencies, we have experienced cuts both in our budget and in our personnel. In 1995, we had 24 employees in the agency, and by the time, through a series of cuts, by the time I got to the agency in 2003, we were down to 12 employees. One of the results was a really significant backlog in cases. We honestly were not getting cases decided in a timely fashion. I worked last session with the legislature. We found funding for an additional position, which has been really helpful. We've made some changes in key personnel, and we've reorganized some of the ways we deliver services, and we have a top-notch staff that has been very engaged and focused solely on getting to the backlog, and I'm happy to report that as we sit here, we are almost virtually through the backlog and caught up timely with the cases, and I guess I would ask for your support so we can continue that work and keep things as they are. I really don't have anything further. I appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning and would be happy to answer any questions you have.
Are there any questions for Mr. Gampson? Yes, Senator Burdick.
Yes, you mentioned a backlog. What caused the backlog in the first place, and what's changed that's allowed you to deal with it?
Chair Devlin, Senator Burdick, the main cause of the backlog was being reduced from 24 employees to 12 employees over a period of about 8 years. And we have since then been dealing pretty significantly with different ways to deliver services and just to do things differently so that we can both deal with the backlog as it exists and make sure that it's a hole that we don't fall into.
And I was tuned out for a second here. I was reading something, so I apologize if you went already went over this, but you've done it with the same 12 employees without expanding staff?
Senator Devlin, Chair Burt, we last session got funding and authorization for a 13th employee, which has really made quite a difference.
One more.
We had one more, and we are at or very close to a point where with a lot of dedication, hard work, and some extra hours, we were able to basically beat the backlog of cases.
Good. Well, you had a fifth.
Now we can all hear one another.
Oh, yeah. Now I'm going to talk.
Don't trust the silence, but go ahead.
I'll try not to scream.
Well, I think this emphasizes, Mr. Chair, why we need to move, because it's a world of difference to be able to actually hear.
That was a song by Iron Butterfly, wasn't it? Don't trust the silence.
I'm too young for that.
Oh.
Please proceed, Mr.
Anyway, I commend you for having such a severe reduction and then being able to make up for it with only one additional employee.
Thank you.
Okay. Any additional questions? Thank you very much for coming here this morning.
Thank you. And I would say that the commendation to me is really a commendation to my staff. It was not, I could not have done it by myself.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. We are told that the noise will probably resume. So I apologize to people that came here. We are going to basically apologize to those of you that are going to have to wait a little bit longer, apologize to the committee. We are going to move to hearing room F. That is the hearing room at the far end of the hall here, closest to the house. I will recess now. Senator Atkinson, we will get you back on the phone once we reconvene. And I will recess now until 5 till 10. And 5 till 10, we will start again promptly.